Blog Talk Radio.
Mental health stigma. What stops us from seeking the help we need? We'll discuss that in a few minutes. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build the machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you have a comment or want to ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the home page, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You'll be able to listen through Blog Talk Radio's website. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Dr. Anthony Young, who, like me, is a member of ULU. Peace, Brother Dr. Young. How are you doing this evening?
I'm well, my sister. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. To begin with, Brother Dr. Young, will you please introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us what you see is keeping us from seeking the mental help we need?
I'm a past national president of the Association of Black Psychologists and a founding member and current president of the Denver Rocky Mountain Association of Black Psychologists. And I've been in the field for about 44 years, which have been in Colorado. I'm out of Chicago originally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So you said you practice psychiatry in the Denver area?
Psychology.
Do me a favor. Yes. What's the difference between psychiatry and psychology?
Well, there's a standing joke among psychologists and psychiatrists. Psychiatrists are medical doctors. They have their training in medicine, and we call them shrinks, psychologists have doctoral degrees in psychology, typically clinical psychology, and we're expansionists. We expand the brain rather than shrink it. So that's a joke among psychologists and psychiatrists.
Okay. All right. Okay. So that's helpful to know. I always get the two mixed up, and I probably will continue to do so, but I'm thanking you for that information. So how did you come up with the question you're answering tonight? What keeps melanated people from seeking the help we need with mental health issues?
Well, let me first say that there's a number of reasons, and we could talk about affordability and access and the fact that less than 1% of all psychologists in this country are melanated, specifically African descent people. So most likely when we seek mental health services, it has to be affordable. Otherwise, we're not going to seek it at all. Being able to have services by someone who is culturally informed about how to work effectively with us, that's another issue, since most of the psychologists and mental health professionals in this country are Caucasian. But even with the issue of affordability having been dealt with, because many people do have insurance, they can access some assistance that way, there's still a lack of African descent psychologists. But even with that, we have another issue, and that deals with stigma, because we know that among our people, there's a big stigma about mental health, and this is age old, and it's well justified. In fact, most of your listeners would probably be familiar with the book Medical Apartheid, and a lot of what we had experienced since we were kidnapped, enslaved, and brought over here to the Northern Hemisphere, we've had instances in which we were used as guinea pigs. We were subjected to all kinds of torment by medical people. And psychology basically is considered part of the medical field in many ways. But we have this history of having been not well served by people who call themselves psychologists or mental health professionals, because we do know that early on, the American Psychological Association, whose founders are eugenicists, you know, they believed in race breeding and that Caucasians were the superior race and all this type of nonsense, they developed very horrible theories about the mental health of African people, and they created this what we call a deficiency deficit model, which meant that white people held themselves up as being the universal norm of what it meant to be healthy, beautiful, etc., and that people who were of African descent were considered to be lesser than. So we have some very white supremacist roots in psychology and psychiatry and in medicine overall. So in addition to that, we have this history of really looking at people with mental health challenges as being quote-unquote crazy, and no one would like to be considered crazy because that in itself has a very negative connotation. I remember growing up on the south side of Chicago, I grew up there during the 50s and 60s, and no one on the entire South Side ever had a psychotic break. Not one person. Instead, we use different language. We talked about people having a nervous breakdown. We may have had relatives or family friends who we didn't see for many months and sometimes for a few years because they were sent away. And what that really meant, the code language, was that they were at a mental health institute somewhere hospitalized due to psychological issues. But no one really wanted to own up to the fact that there was someone in their household or in their family or close to them who had some pretty serious psychological issues. So we used the other language about having a nervous breakdown rather than to talk about someone being really, really mentally ill. And also, I might say that there's shame associated with that, or there has been historically. That's breaking down, I should say, that's going away a bit now because of COVID-19, and many people have began to suffer this social isolation and a higher level of depression behind having been socially distanced for so long that it's becoming a little bit more acceptable to have a psychotherapist. But yet, we still have this prevailing attitude about mental health that it's something that many people would rather avoid talking about rather than really seeking the help that they need. And with that, let me just go one step further, and that's that it's very important that we engage in appropriate help-seeking behavior. And what I mean by that is that if you break your arm, what's the first thing that you'll do? You'll probably seek medical help. You'll find some physician who can reset your bone. That's what most people would do. However, when it comes down to serious mental health challenges, oftentimes rather than getting the help that we need or seeking help appropriately, we might talk to a good friend. And they probably would not have any training in psychotherapy. Or we might seek help from our minister. And ministers are wonderful for spiritual advice. I get that. You know, we have our faith-based community among us, and it's always good to use that for what it is meant to be used for. But however, ministers, by and large, do not have psychology degrees or degrees in counseling, so they really cannot provide the type of help that you really need. The best thing they can do is to drive you to a place where you can get the help that you need, or assist you in making a phone call to set up an appointment and maybe be present on a telephone intake so that you can actually get connected. But they're not psychotherapists, and they cannot really deal with the type of serious mental health challenges that we may have from time to time. So we have the issue about stigma and also being able to engage in appropriate health-seeking behavior.
How does one know that they have a mental health issue and that they need to seek help?
Well,
because you may just think you're just different or whatever the term might be. How do you really know for yourself? We'll use me. I'm walking around and I have a mental health issue. How do I know?
Okay. Let me answer that for you, but first let me give you this analogy or this example, if you will. Imagine mental wellness being on a continuum. On one end of the spectrum, you have people who function extremely well. In fact, they're like what Spike Lee would say. They're at the top of their game, and the only thing they can do is to get more better. On the other extreme, you have people who are disconnected from reality. They may have hallucinations or delusions of various kinds, or but they're totally disconnected from reality. They need to have medication oftentimes and psychotherapy. So that's those are the two extremes. In the middle is where most people mm-hmm. stay. We kind of have a situation where if we may vacillate away from the middle toward one end or another, all depending upon what issues are impacting upon us. It could be like getting married, getting divorced, having children. It can all be stressors. Having to deal with the ongoing micro and macro aggressions that we deal with as a people. That can also cause stress. So, but most of us kind of vacillate right there in the middle of the spectrum. Now, all depending upon what's happening in our lives, we may find ourselves going to the deep end, to that more toward the end of the spectrum where people are having some real major psychological challenges. So being able to understand that when we're at our equilibrium, we feel like we handle life pretty well. We're, no disruptions for the most part with our employment, with our interactions with other people. We're not suffering from depression, even though some things may occur occasionally that may make us sad. But for the most part, we cope and we function pretty well. And when we deviate from what we consider to be our norm, that's the sign that we may need to seek help. Also, if we have people close to us, it could be a close relative or a close friend whose opinion we trust. Okay, this is not just for anybody. But if someone close mm-hmm. to us tell us that, you know, it looks like you're having a hard time with that, I think you might need to get some help. Mm-hmm. That's something that we have to pay attention to. If we ignore the people who love us and are doing their best to tell us to seek help, if we ignore that, we really put ourselves into further jeopardy of having bigger challenges, because it's a warning sign when we identify something ourselves that we might need help with, or someone close to us give us that type of information. And even though we may not see it ourselves, if we trust mm-hmm. this person's opinion because we know that they love us, that's something to really pay attention to.
Okay.
I gave a long answer to your short question.
No, I think it's so much things that are going on now that don't seem right, you know, or mm-hmm. that we were questioning. And so mm-hmm. sometimes you feel you wonder, is it just me or is society going crazy? You know, that kind of stuff. So how it's kind of like, well, when do you know that, well, maybe society's all right. You could do with a little bit of fine-tuning on your end, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like the nature of that question. And I appreciate mm-hmm. the depth that you went to answer it. Because, we don't in generally even think along the terms of getting, thinking that we have a mental health issue and then trying to get help. And some of it is the stigmas of the idea of having a mental health issue. And then there's also the part of thinking that, you know, that's a white folks thing. We don't, you mm-hmm. know, strong black women don't have mental issues, or, you know, strong black men don't have mental issues. That's for white people, you know. So mm-hmm. your answer is quite helpful. So I'm going to invite people to join the conversation. You can call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone if you want to make a comment or ask a question. And Brother Dr. Young will be happy to answer your questions or address your comments. I'm not seeing anyone with their hands raised right now. So what I'm going to do is take a short music break right now, and maybe when we come back, we'll have somebody who would like to make a comment or ask a question. Welcome back to Dare to Win, the Thursday evening program of Us Lifting Us, where we discuss taking control of the economic destiny of our people and how to do it. Before the break, Brother Dr. Young shared with us some of the reasons we do not seek mental health, and he also gave us some clues as to how we know when going to seek help is advisable. Brother Dr. Young, please continue with what you were sharing with us.
Oh, certainly. So there are some pretty clear reasons why we don't seek the help that we need, and being able to address the issue of stigma is one thing, and I would dare say that one way for us to begin to look at mental health challenges, and I don't speak in terms of mental illness, first and foremost. I think that's very Eurocentric to think about people being sick mentally because they tend to make a parallel between physical health and mental health. So the same type of language is used. So I really reject that. I like to talk about mental health, but even better yet, mental wellness. Because that's something which really changes and vacillates for all of us. We have our good days and our bad days. So rather than to think about someone having a mental illness, I would just say, well, we have our challenges. Each of us have our mental challenges. And I'll tell you that one thing which was well documented back in 1999 when Dr. David Satcher, a former U.S. Surgeon General, a brother, in fact, did the first Surgeon General report on mental health. And in it, he identified the fact that 1 out of 10 Americans have a diagnosable mental illness, quote-unquote, every year. So one out of 10 people who we know, including ourselves, may have something which would be diagnosable according to the categories which I've used in psychiatry and psychology. And the most common problem, the most common challenge that people have is depression. Now, as a people, we've been dealing with one pandemic since we were kidnapped and enslaved, and that's the pandemic of white supremacy and all of the evils that come along with that that we've had to be subjected to. And now we have a virus, COVID-19. So we have two concurrent pandemics to deal with, because we've always dealt with this one. Now we have something which has caused us to be socially distanced. And oftentimes people might think that social distancing means that you have to be socially isolated. And the two are not the same. We have to maintain our connectedness with people that we care about and who care about us, even if that means using the technology. And being able to stay connected is a way that we stay healthy. We have to stay in healthy, nurturing, loving relationships in order to maintain our mental wellness. When we get away from people and are not connected to people who love us and who care about us, and we can go into sadness and even clinical depression, because that disconnection is unhealthy. So even with the pandemic of COVID-19, we still have to maintain our connectedness with each other. And we have to do it in some healthy, nurturing ways as well. So we have to make a bigger effort to make that happen.
We have someone holding on. Let's see. Caller with the last four digits, 3176, please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your question or comment, please.
Good evening. This is Brother Auntie from Atlanta. Good evening
peace
to you, Sister
Auntie.
Q, and to Dr. Young. Good to hear your voice, and thank you so much for this topic. And I think, Dr. Young, you referred to my question just a moment ago when you talked about the pandemic of white supremacy. And I was thinking about the work that Dr. Joy DeGree and Dr. Pat Newton have been doing in the area of post-traumatic slavery syndrome and post-traumatic slavery disorder. And and with all of the barrage of on television we see of violence being done to black bodies, would you recommend or suggest that somehow we have access to mental wellness practitioners on a regular basis, the same way we go to the gym? Would it make sense for us to have a check-in periodically with a mental wellness practitioner? I mean, how do we be intentional about taking care of ourselves mentally in such a climate that we find ourselves in?
Well, actually, what you just suggested is an excellent way. Just like we have our annual physical exam, it would be wonderful if we actually just decided that we were going to make that space on our calendar and do a check-in. It does not have to be something wrong for us to go in to see a mental wellness professional. We could just simply go in and say, hey, I would like to have a discussion with you about something which is important to me. And I would dare say that being mindful of the fact that anything that you share with a mental health professional is confidential. Okay, so you can talk about anything except there are two areas that you cannot actually, there's two very special areas that if you share information in confidence, it cannot be held confidential. And I'll tell you, if you tell the therapist that you plan on harming someone else, by law and by ethics, that's not confidential. Also, if you have if you verbalize any desire to commit suicide, that cannot be held confidential either, because the professional is responsible for making sure that you get help to protect yourself from committing suicide. Also, if there's any information about a child being abused, that is not confidential because all three of those are reportable. So outside of that, you can talk to a mental health professional about anything that you want, even things that you might feel self-conscious about or things that you have not shared with other people because of how you believe they might respond to you. So within that setting of being in a therapy setting or counseling, you can actually bounce ideas off of this person and really tell them how you've been feeling. All that is healthy because too often times, and men have this bad, brothers have this real bad, and I'm speaking for myself as well, because when I was younger, I didn't know any better that we would tend to stuff our feelings, things which are going on which may be bothering us, we don't even talk about. Even with people who are close to us, we just say, hey, you're a man, so just suck it up, just deal with it. You know, to show that you are having a challenge is oftentimes being perceived as a sign of weakness. And nothing could be further from the truth. It's the fact that you are aware that there's something that might be amiss that you want to talk about is really a good, healthy sign.
Thank you for sharing that. Brother Auntie, is that answer your question or?
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm good.
Okay. Thank you. Brother Dr. Young, I appreciate what you said. Oh, hold on. We got somebody else on the line. Your conversation is stimulating, I'll say that, and clarifying as well. Caller with the last four digits, 6093, please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your question or comment. Thank you.
Yes, greetings. This is Sister Nanana calling. How are you doing this evening, Sister Q and Brother Tony?
Hey, my sister, I'm doing well. Good to have you online with
us. Good. Okay, thank you. Yeah, the question that I have, Dr. Young, is concerning ancestral memory. What is your, how do you see that? The whole theory, is it supported by evidence that our DNA actually carries an ancestral memory and that there are times when that comes to the surface and may impact how we are either behaving or how we perceive certain situations. From a psychologist standpoint, what's your feeling concerning that? Thank you.
Okay. Well, first let me begin with the fact that I'll be speaking from an African-centered perspective. Even though most African-American psychologists were trained in Caucasian universities and colleges and what have you, we know that we have to go beyond that Eurocentric training and actually delve deeper into our own history, our psychosocial historical experience, and realizing that the roots of psychology is really, it's not European. You know, oftentimes we're given this lie that it was Sigmund Freud and Wundt and some other people in Germany and in Europe who had actually created psychology. Psychology was actually developed in ancient Kemet, and it was known as the study of the illumination of the human spirit rather than the study of human behavior, which is something which is Eurocentric. You know, it's not about just studying behavior. It's about the human spirit. And we know that without a fear of contradiction that we are not just, 30, 40, 50 years old. Our spirits are eternal and that we have this connection with our ancestors and being able to acknowledge that and to respect that we can actually draw strength from it. But you cannot draw strength from something that you don't know and that you don't understand and that you don't take time to really get in touch with. So there's a real value and understanding our ancestral roots and that ongoing connection that we have with them. It's not like they're dead and buried, because the spirits are eternal. They're not as we would consider from a Eurocentric vantage point. You know, people live and they die, then they're gone, or they're going to heaven, or they're going to hell. And from an African-centered vantage point, we look at that paradigm as being alien, because it really is to who and what we are through space and time as a people. So being able to have the ongoing connection with our ancestors is so important. I know that for those of us who have had a Christian faith tradition at some point in our life, we will hear about some of the older people being visited at night by the spirits, and they were being visited by family members typically. And there was some dialogue between the living and the spirit, and that was not seen as being something which was crazy. It was something which is really a remnant of our African cultural roots that we've been disconnected from for a very long time. So being able to study that. In fact, there's some wonderful books by Brother Mbuti. He's an African philosopher. There's many books and lectures by Dr. Jake Carruthers, who is now an ancestor. Dr. Ben, and we can go on and talk about some of the deep thinkers among our people that really talked about the value of being connected to our ancestors. So I'll stop that. I'll stop there. Did I answer your question? Because I could go on.
Yes, thank you so much.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say, Brother Dr. Young, as you mentioned, visitation by the spirits of the ancestors and so on are common and among us, among African people, used to be, or I remember seeing something in a magazine one time about basically that, being visited by the spirit of your ancestors or something along those lines. And it was identified as a mental health issue, even though the magazine that it was in was a magazine for African people. So the question that brings to mind is, how do you know? Okay, so that's something that we do. It's not a problem. It's part of our ability to navigate both realms, we'll say. But if you go to a mental health professional and you bring up the fact that you're able to navigate both realms, you're very likely to be told that that you have a mental health issue and you need medication for hallucinations or whatever else they tell you. How do you make sure that you get a mental health professional that is aware of, like you said, our heritage, and that is not going to classify us as needing medication to stop us from being able to do what we do so well?
Well, first and foremost, and I'll go back to that, the vast majority of mental health professionals are trained from a Eurocentric perspective, which does not respect the spirits. Okay?
That's the first problem.
Yeah, so how do you
find one who does?
And that's very difficult because in the professions, you really are trained to keep one's spirituality separate from one's practice. So there are some African-centered practitioners, such as with the Progressive Life Center out of Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and then some of the other places where you have people who might be trained in the Eurocentric institutions, but yet they're very astute and very much in touch with the African cultural roots of our spirituality. Because as a people, first and foremost, we are very spiritual. It doesn't matter where you find black folk on the face of the earth because we are the indigenous people of the planet. That's why mm-hmm. we're found all over the globe, places where white folks were trying to explore and quote-unquote discover. We were already there, and we had been there for thousands of years. So mm-hmm. so the challenge that we have is to make sure that we're able to identify, and this definitely takes some research on anyone's part who's interested in getting that type of assistance, because you don't want to get misdiagnosed, because oftentimes we are misdiagnosed. Because mm-hmm. there's a tendency to ignore the cultural differences of one's psychosocial historical experience in this country. So it's very, very common to be misdiagnosed. But having said that, let me say that even among us, there are times when some of our people may actually have some real hallucinations and may be out of touch with reality despite their spiritual grounding. So I would mm-hmm. not say that it's either or. It could be both and. But
yeah, for sure.
The fact is that when you're seeking help, you have to have someone who is culturally informed and culturally responsive. I won't use the term culturally competent because it's not competent. It's not possible to be competent in somebody else's culture.
But really,
be able to have someone who has that sensitivity and that awareness and that knowledge base that they will not misdiagnose you if you say, well, I was visited by my grandmother who just passed last week. She came in, spoke to me last night, and she told me about some things I needed to do for myself. And that's quite mm-hmm. different than someone who is going into a therapy session and saying, you know, I saw this this green monster that was 8 feet tall and it was drinking Budweiser. You know, that's real different.
Right, I guess.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, okay. So, and it kind of, in a way, it's kind of like you have to have a personal degree of wellness to know when you're kind of stepping off there a little bit.
Most people will know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, most people would know that because we, all of us are basically born with a certain amount of equilibrium, and it, mm-hmm. and when that vacillates in some way, we sense it.
Yes.
And that's when we can begin to kind of challenge or question. We might be on point or we might be totally off base, but having people
mm-hmm.
who you care about, whose opinion you trust, touching
mm-hmm.
base with them, just to see, hey, whether or not you're within bounds or not, can be a first step. You know, because one thing that we all need at some point is validation by other people. And it's not just anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like people
right.
who we really care about and who care about us. Because if I'm walking down the street and someone says something ugly to me, I would probably just ignore them, you know, because, I mean, like, who
mm-hmm.
are they to me? Their opinions
exactly.
do not mean anything to them. In contrast to a close friend, they say something
mm-hmm.
to me that might get my attention because, you know, I trust them. So
mm-hmm.
it's very important to have that type of connection. So when you're seeking a therapist or someone who can do counseling with you, in confidence, of course, a professional, it's important to check them out and find out exactly what type of opinions do they have about your cultural roots and your
right.
appreciation of who and what you are historically and culturally. And if you don't respect that, you need to find somebody who does.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a second musical break here, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night program, where we discuss taking control of the economic destiny of our people and how we're going to do that. I'm Sister Q, and here with me again is Brother Dr. Young. Brother Dr. Young, you mentioned that you also are a member of ULU. Would you mind sharing the what value you see in being a ULU member?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's a way that we can get out of some of this madness economically. I think that as a people in this country, we have a history of having co-ops and being able to have our alternative economic system despite all of the madness that capitalism has prevented us with. So being able to be part of ULU allows me the opportunity to be involved with like-minded people who are concerned about our economic development and looking at ways in which we can actually pool our resources and do some creative financing of areas which are important to us, may that be agriculture or real estate or whatever, but it's something which is for us and by us. And for me, that's the real value. This is all about us being able to do for ourselves something that Marcus Garvey talked about so eloquently. And, of course, our ancestors, in addition to Marcus Garvey, talks about this in so many different ways, that we have ULU as a way of really making that concrete and bringing that into fruition. So it's not just an idea, it's something which is actually being done.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. We have another somebody else on the line. We've got two more people. Okay. Let's see. Caller with the last four digits, 8912, please state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question, or make your comment.
Yes, this is Brother Thurman calling from Richmond, Virginia. I'm a Us Lifting Us member, and thank you so much, Sister Q and Dr. Young, for the conversation tonight about mental health. And brother, you have been bringing it so well. We certainly welcome you to come back, because I know you can go on beyond an hour.
And, thank you.
Yeah, because I heard you say that earlier, you know, you could go on. And I got a question that's related to there's something that I learned about for the first time in the last couple of weeks or so. My sister is writing and really delving into this subject about rest and liberation. And she goes on into among the things that she was saying, that when we're not getting the proper rest, and that our ancestors that were on the plantations and working for 20 hours, that their dream space had been stolen because they were not dreaming or not able to dream with working 20 hours a day. And that's been a complete theft. And I hope that my question would be to you, have you in your experience seen a relationship to our mental health having some deficiencies in our mental health that's related to or could help to be made better with proper rest?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, in psychology, we have had a number of studies dealing with sleep deprivation. And we do know that when people are deprived of sleep in any significant way, the body does not heal as well. We're not as mentally sharp. In fact, in some of the studies which were done, this is around the time of the Korean War, when some of the prisoners had been subjected to sleep deprivation, they actually became quite psychotic. They became really out of touch with reality. So it can have some very detrimental effects upon the mind, body, and soul when we're deprived of adequate sleep substantially. If it's just an occasional issue, that's not such a big deal, but we have to be very mindful about taking care of ourselves, and getting adequate rest allows us to heal on many different levels. And when we don't do that, we can have a cumulative effect upon how well we function. So being able to take care of ourselves is essential, and getting adequate rest, and also eating proper foods, I would add to that, is really important. You know, there's an old saying that you are what you eat. The other part of that is that you're also what you ingest. Garbage. And if you are what you eat and you are what you ingest, some people are full of blank. So it's very important that we take care of ourselves, getting adequate rest and eating healthy, because we know that we only have one temple, one physical temple. And if we destroy that by not taking care of it and nurturing it, it will not take care of us.
Good word. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Vernon. Brother Dr. Young, we have someone else also too on the line. Just a minute. Okay, caller with the last four digits of 0879. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your question or comment.
Good evening. My name is Terry, and I'm calling from Inglewood, California. I am so glad I was able to get on this call this evening. And this message has been phenomenal, and I'm greatly appreciative of this. But my question is, I have a 26-year-old son who has been having some mental challenges, and he had reached out to me a couple of years ago saying, Mom, who can I talk to? And honestly, I didn't know of any black psychologists. I referred him to a book that I later learned about, The Psychology of Blacks from an African-Centered Perspective by Dr. Thomas Parham and a couple of other psychologists, because I met him because one of my sons was attending the 100 Black Men of the 100 Black Men organization. But anyway, I was just giving you that little information. But now this son has not spoken to me in probably 6 months. He went through an anger issue with my daughter, and his dad and I have been divorced for about 14 years, and he's been working on his brain, making him feel like I'm the reason that he has his psychological issues. And so now I have been alarmed that he's not responding or trying to reach out to me. He moved to St. Louis to stay with his dad's relative, and he is not in communication with me. I've been reaching out with a friend of his that I met, and, you know, I had her text him a birthday card that I sent to him that I didn't have any way of mailing to him. So with all of that said, I was just trying to give you a little background on what I've been confronted with. And I really, at first, it really bothered me, but because of my, I guess, spiritual consciousness that I've been in prayer about him, and I've kind of released him and just said, you know, when he's ready to talk to me, if he'll ever be ready to talk to me, this is the longest time he's not spoken to me. But I guess I just would like to get your perspective on what I could do, or if I can somehow have him reach out to you, because I feel like, you know, that he doesn't want to talk to me anymore. And it was troubling, but I've gotten better. To just say, okay, I have four children, and one of them is not talking to me. And that is kind of alarming. Any suggestions on how I can, what I should do or not do?
Well, first let me say that dealing with family issues, they can be quite complicated and quite painful. The best thing that we can do with our adult children is to realize that there's some work that they have to do about forgiving and working through their own issues. It's not totally up to the parent to try to engage with an adult child who have to work through their own issues. And it would be a good move for him to get in touch with a psychologist. We have a large chapter of the Association of Black Psychology in Los Angeles, and our members who live in Inglewood, and we have a number of members there. And if he was interested, because he would have to make the contact through our national office in Washington, D.C., we can actually get a referral source for him. That's the work that he has to do, and no one can do it for him. For your part, I would encourage you to continue to use prayer and to be able to realize that as much as you can do, you've done, but it's not totally up to you. He has the work that he has to do, and for your still being willing to accept him and to communicate with him despite the fact that he may still be very angry about the divorce or what have you, it's good for you to have that space open, but there's some work that he has to do.
First and foremost,
because too often times, you're welcome. I find that the parents may actually blame themselves for their children not being in contact with them. You may have done everything under the sun, but remember, it's not totally up to you. They have some responsibility because they're adults.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling in. Lost my screen there. I want to say before we close out the program that for those who are interested in joining ULU, please visit our website, www.usliftingus.com, or you can call 404-592-2780, or you can email us at info@usliftingus.com. It's $1,000 to purchase an investment unit. You don't have to do that right away. As a matter of fact, you can't do that right away, because when you want to join, you have to be vetted. So after you're vetted and everything, then you can give us your money. We don't take money from just anybody. So, Brother Dr. Young, would you like to leave any contact information or anything like that before you go with our listeners?
Sure. My contact information is the Denver Rocky Mountain Association of Black Psychologists. We're on Facebook and that's the entire Facebook name. And the last comment that I would like to kind of wrap up with is that when we think about mental wellness, the one area that, if we had time, I would like to touch on is the fact that our greatest defense against the pandemic of white supremacy and all of the madness that we've been exposed to in this country, our greatest defense is to be well-rooted and well-grounded in our culture as a people, because we can draw strength from that if we understand who and what we are connected to through space and time. So the ancestors are there for us to draw strength from, as well as our immediate ancestors who have transitioned. So we should not take that lightly, because it's a major source of strength that we can actually tap into. So I would encourage everyone to be well-grounded in our African-centeredness, in our African spirituality.
Thank you for sharing that with us. That's something we need to really remember. And I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening and for the questions and comments. Deswin will be back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock, and we hope that you will join us at that time. Thank you, everyone. Peace.
Peace.
Together, we're polishing up our act. If you ever